from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in March of 2014. CenturySafe, a Pittsford company founded in 1930, was looking to sell. It had been a family-owned company for more than 80 years, and the ownership decided they did want to make sure the jobs would remain in the Rochester area. The CenturySafe plant in Pittsford employs roughly 350 people, and many of them have been there for more than two decades. So the company narrowed an initial list of a dozen suitors down to six, and on July 28th of last year, they closed the deal with Masterlock. Masterlock would buy the company for about $117 million, and while there was no written guarantee on keeping the company in the Rochester area, CenturySafe management insists there was indeed an understanding. But now, less than a year later, Masterlock has decided to close the Pittsford operation. Those jobs will move to Wisconsin and to Mexico. Masterlock is also shutting down a plant in Indiana. The company, through a statement, said that these moves are about staying competitive. The Pittsford facility will close by June of 2016. Some of the company's job shifts will start in January. So why can't Masterlock remain competitive with the Pittsford facility? How did this happen? And was there at least a handshake agreement to keep those jobs here? We're going to get some business analysis this hour from George Conboy, the CEO of Brighton Securities. He's with me in studio. Nice to see you, George.
Thank you, Evan.
And on the line with us is Jim Brush, the former CEO of CenturySafe. Jim, nice to talk to you.
Hi, Evan. Thanks.
Well, I know it hasn't been a great week for you, Jim, and I just want to start with this. Before we even really get to the history of your company, did you really feel that you had an agreement of any kind with Masterlock to keep these jobs in the Rochester area?
Well, Evan, all I can say is that was the number one criteria for the sale of the business. So we knew that the money was going to be fine for shareholders, and the key criteria for my brother and I and for our board was the right company to land the business with after three generations to see it continue to be successful. And yes, we had discussions with the finalists, and they convinced Doug and I that they were sincere about keeping the business here and continuing to run it as we had.
Did you are you at liberty to say, were the other finalists, did they offer you any sort of assurances? Did you feel like Masterlock was the most likely to stay here?
Well, yeah, yes, we did. That's why we chose them. We felt that for a lot of reasons, the way they saw our company being integrated into theirs, the strength of our business, the level of capital investment, the fact that we were a nicely profitable business, even in upstate New York. You know, you don't exist as a manufacturer in upstate New York unless you've got some something besides cost and price to sell on. So we didn't think there was a big need to move it anyway. But yeah, we in our discussions with the person who was at that time, the CEO of Masterlock, Doug and I had a very candid and frank discussion that was going to be the most important criteria in the sale, and that their offer, their proposal to us, should keep that in mind. And all the things that they did convinced us that that would be the outcome.
Was it simply a comment or a discussion you had with their management that tell the Brush family not to worry, that this is an operation that is stable, that has a long-term history in the Rochester area? It's not moving. Did they tell you with a handshake, we promise we won't do it? Did they tell you, we're likely to stay, but we can't guarantee it? How would you characterize it?
Well, keep in mind, this is a public company. It's part of Fortune Brands, and you know, they can't make any promises. And Doug and I didn't expect a promise. But I happen to know the CEO from a former business organization I was part of. I trusted him. This is a guy who had made his claim to fame in business on innovation and on going and on product development, and that was his plan for our company. And so I was pretty convinced that this is a guy who's done it before. That's his plan to do it. So while there was nothing written, there was nothing promised, Doug and I really felt that given the intention of their buying the company, the strength of their brand and the Century brand, there's lots of reasons to believe that they would keep the company here in Rochester and that they're the right company to have the company move forward with.
How did you find out about the move?
I got a phone call on Tuesday at 3:30 as they were simultaneously apparently announcing it to our employees from Masterlock's Vice President of Operations. And he was maybe a five-minute phone call, and he said they'd made this decision and that it was being announced today.
What was your first reaction?
I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. I had to twice say, wait, you're telling me you're shutting down the manufacturing operation and moving it? And he said, yes, I was. And I still am numb and just sick to my stomach
Talking to Jim Brush, the former CEO of Century Safe, a company founded in 1930, had been in his family and was sold in July of last year to Master Lock, which announced this week that the company will shut down the Pittsford operation, about 350 jobs, and those jobs will move to Wisconsin and to Mexico. And Bob Duffy is the CEO of the Rochester Business Alliance. He also called this move a shock, said there was no warning, and he said that maybe there should be more formal agreements in the future to prevent this. First of all, George Convoy with Brighton Securities, is that realistic? Can there be formal agreements to prevent this kind of thing?
Not really realistic, Evan. The John D. Brush Company, I'm sorry, Century Safe, was a privately held asset, a privately held company. They can do what they want. And unless some governmental or NGO organization like the RBA wants to offer some kinds of concessions, inducements, or something that would be a contractual compensation, they're not going to be able to enforce any kind of agreement or expectation that a company should stay in place.
Is there a danger to the head of the RBA, business leaders locally, sort of rattling saber saying, hey, in the future we want to prevent this? Could that scare off possible suitors in the future who feel like that they wouldn't have flexibility?
No, it's a toothless comment from that perspective. So if you're in business, you're not going to worry about what somebody from the RBA has to say about we don't want you to leave. You might be interested to hear that because maybe you can convince them to do something to keep you from leaving.
A little leverage.
Some leverage, but it would be completely voluntary. They can't do anything to stop you.
Yeah, and Jim Brush, to that end, when you hear the Bob Duffys of the world, the people who I assume you know pretty well, saying that they were disappointed with Master Lock's decision, that they'd like to prevent this in the future. You agree with George that you know, it's a nice sentiment, but probably not very possible?
Yeah, I just, you know, any public company can't be bound by promises like that. They're going to have to, when their business says the conditions at the time exist and they change in unforeseeable ways. So, yeah, I think as nice as it would be to have that, I think it's realistically not possible.
Our listeners, if you want to call the program as we talk about these jobs leaving and the impact in the region, it's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We're talking to George Convoy in studios. In studio, he's the CEO of Brighton Securities, and on the line with us is Jim Brush, the former CEO of Century Safe. Now, Jim, I know you know that no matter what you say, you will have some who believe that you either should have seen this coming or were indifferent to it. I know you know so many of the current employees well and have known them for years. What is it like for you to hear that some are suspicious of your comments regarding what Master Lock has done?
Well, of course, disappointing doesn't begin to describe it. This is a company that has been in Rochester for three generations, started by my grandfather. You know, we've always taken our commitment to the community who supported us so well, very seriously, and tried really hard to give back and have treated our employees like part of our family. We've been a profit-sharing company, health club on site, lots of good benefits, doctor on site. We give employees their birthdays off in lots of ways, try to demonstrate to them that this is more than just a company. This is a family with a common purpose, organized around what was a very clear strategic plan that we put together every year, updated it every year, deployed it to all of our employees, and you know, trusted them to do their jobs and asked them to help us do it. And what we got in return was a very loyal workforce, low turnover, people who were really invested and you know, made it possible for us to win in the marketplace against low-price competition with much, much higher prices in the market because we had a better product, an innovative thing that consumers would pay more for.
Here's a question from our website from Jenny, who's listening to the program. She wants to know, was there ever any discussion of a local buyout for Century Safe?
We used an investment banker in the process. We sent solicitations, confidential solicitations, before we ever announced that we were selling to about 200 companies, some were local. But, you know, we knew the character of the company that was most likely to buy us. And there weren't a lot in Rochester that really fit that profile.
Let me grab our first phone call. And Rick in Rochester is on the line with us. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Okay, go ahead.
I'm just as appalled to hear that the company who comes in takes a company that's been here for decades, as you've all stated. But I also think what needs to be realized is that if you have a company such as Master Lock, who is closing shops in New York and Indiana to open in Wisconsin, one has to ask, what did Wisconsin give them, number one? And number two, why isn't the state of New York rushing to find out just that, to keep these jobs here?
Yeah, Rick, thank you for the call. And that's a very fair question. I'll start with you, Jim. Did those questions come into your mind?
Well, I had a hard time understanding the call. And I can say, though, that we had no indication. Everything we saw is that Master Lock's a healthy, growing company, part of a multi-billion-dollar company, growing through innovation. And, lots of reasons that our brand and our product line fit with them. So we really never really thought that there would be a consideration to move the business. And as far as the state of New York goes, I have not been successful in reaching Bob Duffy. I understand that Master Lock reached out to several local officials. I assume Bob was one of them. I think they probably discussed if there was anything the state of New York and local governments could do to change the decision. And I think the response was no, but I haven't heard that personally. I'd certainly want to make sure we look under every rock before we get that up.
Sure. And George Conboy, caller was essentially saying, they must have a pretty good deal in Wisconsin, and certainly it's going to be cheaper for them to do business in Mexico.
Not necessarily, Evan.
No.
But think about it this way. If you had a company here in Rochester that said, listen, we've got a couple of locations, and we think we can bring 50 or 100 jobs from Wisconsin to Rochester, and they went to Comida or the state and said, what can you do for us? Not unreasonable to think the state might do something. But even if there's no incentive from some other state, the fact is they have these operations already. And in Wisconsin, they've got their headquarters operation. You can imagine there's design work being done, marketing, finance. Whenever you have an acquisition of one company by a larger company, among the first jobs that are vulnerable are headquarters-type jobs. If you've got a guy running a machine stamping out a product, that might stay on site. But marketing and finance and HQ operations often migrate to the parent company. So that's not a surprise, and they may not have offered anything. It might have been just cheaper to do it there.
Okay. Let me grab Chris in Rochester. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi. I have a question, but first I'd like to make a comment regarding why they moved to Wisconsin. And I think a really good answer to that would be because they're killing unions in Wisconsin. But anyway, my question is, if Mr. Brush was so hot to make a really good local company making a great product with employees that are really dedicated, et cetera, why'd they sell it?
Thank you, Chris. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, that's a good question, Chris. Here's why. My brother and I were third-generation family. We had no fourth generation coming along. We told our kids as they grew up, you should find your passion to follow it. If it turns out that it's making safes, that's great. If not, then follow your passion. And it was pretty clear about 5 years ago when we made the decision that we really were on a path to sell the business, that there wasn't a fourth generation coming along. And Doug and I, I'm 60, Doug's a little older. We have an outside board, and the outside board had been encouraging both of us for about 5 years to really develop an exit plan. And their counsel to us was, once you get over 60 years old and you choose to sell, you're going to look a lot less like help. So if you're going to do it, now is the time. So that was the reason we chose to sell the company and why we did it now.
And Jim, when you were running the company, how long were you in control of CenturySafe?
We're CEO since 2002, I believe, and my brother was CEO from 86 before that.
Okay, and so In those years, certainly we have seen plenty of Rochester companies relocate work elsewhere. And I'm not just talking about the big manufacturers. Certainly you can put them on that list, but others as well. Did you ever think about it? And I'm not asking for sentimental reasons and for you to say, no, we never would have left Rochester. I'm talking about from a bottom line business perspective. Did you ever find yourself saying, hey, I'm at least gonna find out. I don't think we're going to move, but I'd like to know, if we want to do business a little bit more efficiently, where could we go? Did that conversation ever happen?
Well, of course. We had to remain competitive here. Here we make a product that's largely a commodity. There are hundreds of manufacturers in China that do it at a lower cost. And our value proposition had to be the strongest. And the path we chose and the path that worked for us was an innovation platform. Have something new and different that we discovered from the consumer that they're willing to pay more for than some cheap box from China. So the bottom line is we know, it's no secret that you can find lower labor costs in Mexico. We had our own manufacturing plant in China for a long time. We sold it because it just didn't make economic sense anymore. So, yes, we did look at it. We were smart about it. But at the end of the day, it was much more important for us to have a culture that supported an innovative business strategy and a cadre of people who were really working for it. That, at the end, was the thing that won in the marketplace. It beat the low-cost Chinese. We didn't need to move to a low-labor country in order to be profitable.
Now, Chris should listen to an analogy, and that is that it sounds like she was taking a shot at Jim Brush, whom I have never met, but taking a shot for selling his company. The fact is, if you own a home, or if you want to sell your home, you need to move, you want to move, need a different house, would you walk around your neighborhood and ask the neighbors within a couple blocks who'd like to buy your house? Or would you list it with a realtor and multiple list it so it's located virtually everywhere as a listing? And you have to ask yourself, most people are going to multiple list their home. Why? It's an important asset to them. You can't deny them the ability to seek the right price for it. I'm torn up that they're going to close this operation and move to Mexico. But to say that the Brush family shouldn't be able to do that and should only be able to seek buyers in Rochester is just unrealistic.
Jim, would you have taken less if you would have felt that you could have got a really rock-solid guarantee, again, that you thought you had with Masterlock, but in retrospect, would you have taken less if you somehow had the control to keep those jobs here?
Well, the fact is, Evan, we did take less. We had offers from private equity firms that were superior financially, but we thought that Masterlock had, for all the reasons I already described, was the better bet for the jobs in Rochester, for the continuity of the business, so we could have cashed out at a significantly higher price, and we chose not to. At the end of the day, especially my brother and I had, was no matter where we go, the money's going to be fine. You know, we're going to be just fine. Plus or minus 15% isn't going to matter. Let's find the right company that we can look back and on that park bench after we've retired, we can feel good about what we've done and capstone two generations of Brush family influence in this community.
It's 844-295-TALK if you want to join the conversation. We're talking to former CEO of CenturySafe, Jim Brush, on the line with us, and George Conboy, the CEO of Brighton Securities, talking about CenturySafe, the company in Pittsford with about 350 employees. Those jobs will be gone within about a year as they move to Wisconsin and to Mexico. Masterlock purchased CenturySafe in July of last year and decided and announced this week that they are leaving the Rochester area, despite what the Brush family thought was a pretty good expectation that that would not happen. Richard in Rochester. Go ahead, Richard.
I wonder if the statement from Masterlock is really disingenuous and 90% of the jobs are going to go to Mexico. Because after all, Wisconsin is very similar to New York State, a lot of very highly skilled machinists and decent wages. So if that is the case, the real issue for the subject of this program, I think, ought to be national policy and foreign trade policy. Because with NAFTA, this is just one more example of jobs fleeing to Mexico, where wages are about a third to a fifth what they are here. I'd like to hear your comments.
Richard, thank you for the call. First of all, Jim Brush, do you know the breakdown at all of those 350 jobs going from Pittsford to Wisconsin and Mexico, but what the breakdown will be?
No, I don't. I suspect, just given that I know about them, I suspect the majority would end up in Mexico.
Yeah.
Because I know they have lighter facilities down there. So I suspect that that's where the majority of the direct labor workforce is going to end up.
Okay. George Conboy, what do you make of Richard's comments?
Richard's comment that a large public corporation might have said something disingenuous, I'm shocked. Shocked that they would say that.
Yeah. What do you make of his comment of going all the way back to NAFTA, saying that that these are some of the impacts still?
It is truly an impact, and I generally support free trade, but the reality is whether you support something like NAFTA or the Pacific Trade Pact, whether you do or not, trying to go around the laws of economics, in the end, it's like trying to go around the laws of gravity. Ultimately, if all that matters are wage costs, then jobs will seek the lowest wage cost. I think what you need to do is engineer your products, sell your products, position your company in such a way that there are more inputs than just wage costs. And it sounds like the Brush family was successfully able to do that in Rochester for many years. When we look at a larger company like Fortune, and they look at the Century operation as a single-digit percentage of their overall picture, it becomes a small corner of a big company. They just don't care as much.
Before I get back to the phones, I'm going to do that in just a second. I do want to point out that Master Lock, in a statement, they haven't said much, but in a statement, they did deny the idea that there was any sort of a guarantee or an agreement that these jobs would stay here. Jim Brush, how do you respond to that?
Well, that's true. There was no guarantee. There's nothing in writing. They're a public company. And like I said earlier, Doug and I didn't expect them to swear a blood oath. We were very careful, though, and thoughtful. And like I said, spoke with their CEO face-to-face. I remember vividly in our offices. I made it clear to them that the winning bid, this is before we narrowed their field down to even two or three, the winning bid that would get Doug's and my attention. The money's going to be okay no matter what. The winning bid is going to be from a company that convinces us that this is an organization that's going to perpetuate the business and the culture as closely to what the Brush family has done historically as possible. And Doug and I believe him. And it made sense. Their brand, the strength of our product line with theirs, the huge capital investment. Now, keep in mind, moving this manufacturing plant anywhere, Mexico or any place, is a huge risk. There's a lot of trade secrets. There's a lot of built-up knowledge. There's a lot of supply chain. I think if they think they can move this down there and just turn the button and start making UL-rated fireproof safes that do the job, day one is a very, very, very big risk. So, but to answer your question, there was no guarantee. We didn't expect to get a guarantee. We used our business judgment and given the factors we knew at the time and the assurances that we were given about their how they're going to use our product in the company, we felt very good that this operation would stay right here.
Maggie in Rochester. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hi. I'd like to say that Jim Brush's audio is not too good. I'm having some trouble understanding everything, but I'm getting the gist of it. Anyway, some of my family members work there, and some of them have been there more than 20 years, and it's been such a good company. The Brushes were so community-minded. They were they treated their employees like family, and I feel real bad that this is happening to my family members. But I think what you see is so typical of big business nowadays. They have no loyalty to their people. They don't care. Here, Sentry is the profitable cog in their organization, but so what? They came here in their corporate jet. They picked up security to go down and meet with the people to give them the bad news. I don't think the Brushes flew around in corporate jets. And the whole thing just has left a very bad taste in my mouth. And I also have been told by not just the people I know at Sentry, but that the people in the main plant, the main headquarters, who made this deal with the Brushes, those people were fired. So I'm wondering about that, too.
Maggie, thanks for the call. There's a couple of pieces to respond to there. Jim, first of all, just her characterization of your family. Because, again, I know as the former CEO, you're going to deal with people who are angry with you, and you're going to deal with people who say you treated us like family and we feel terrible about this. Your general thoughts about what Maggie had to say about the company.
Well, first, Maggie, thank you very much. I probably know your family members. I know almost all of them by name. I give them birthday cards. I used to on their birthday and their day off. So that makes me feel great. And I think that's largely how we're known in the community. We've tried really hard to earn the right to be a good member of in good standing in our community and treat our employees well and earn those kinds of comments. So that makes me feel wonderful. It's the reason, of course, that I feel so sick now that culture and that company that we spent three generations building up and we were so successful without having to resort to low labor costs and providing really good benefits, that all that is now going to evaporate.
She also asked, and I don't know if you either know or can say, but she said that she has heard that the person who made the kind of agreement with the Brush family from Master Lock is no longer in that position. And I don't know if that's true or not, and I don't know if you do either, Jim.
Well, I do happen to know that is true. The individual who was CEO and we struck our deal is no longer with the Master Lock Company. I don't feel like I'm at liberty to talk about the circumstances, but he is no longer the CEO. He left the company, I believe, in November.
If he were there, if he were still there, do you think Master Lock would still be in Pittsford?
Well, I'd just be guessing. I would think so, although I'm just not familiar with the circumstances of his departure, so I feel funny guessing.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call, Maggie. This is Tony in Penfield. Go ahead, Tony.
Yes. A good friend of mine, almost a relative, worked with Brush back when they were out of a garage in Gates, and finally became the plant manager over here at the local plant, and knew the Brushes very well. He swore by them. They were the best thing since sliced bread. Treated the employees beautifully, and to have this happen, I was shocked because I was so close with my buddy there. However, now that you've got a plant that's going to sit there empty, and you've got a whole bunch of local workers who are skilled, anybody thinking about establishing something there and getting some stockholders involved locally so that they could start a business, one that may not be the safe business, but it could be ancillary to that type of thing, machine screws or whatever. I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Tony, thank you. It's a great point. We're talking about a facility now that apparently I don't know if there are going to be any plans for it. What do you think happens to that building, Jim?
Well, I really haven't been, I don't know is the short answer. I assume it will be closed. And if they're going to goof production, they don't need those buildings. I would like to think that there would be a way that could happen. I've just in the last 24 hours, I've gotten several calls from former board members or local CEOs wanting to know if there are some good people available. And I'm certainly going to do, if this is what's going to happen, I'm certainly going to do everything I can to make sure we land them in the right place. Part of our arrangement was a non-compete, so there's no way my brother and I could start making safe there again, even if we wanted to. So that's, unfortunately, that's not in the cards.
George Conboy, when you potentially mothball something like this, look, we're all just guessing, but any hope for that kind of a structure or building, the business community can do anything with it?
Sure, although there's no lack of good industrial space in Rochester,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's plenty of space. It's a good location. It's a modern building. I imagine it's well-equipped, but it's a crapshoot about whether you could quickly lease it, and the longer it takes to get it filled, the less likely you'll fill it profitably.
We're talking to George Conboy from Brighton Securities in studio, and on the line with us is Jim Brush, the former CEO of CenturySafe, a company that was founded in 1930 by whom, Jim?
By my grandfather, who was at that time a Unitarian minister, and for his own reasons decided that that was too sedate a life. He took his wife's life savings and his brother-in-law's harebrained idea about making safes in a different way, sort of like Henry Ford was then making cars. An innovative way, and worked for years without a salary. Obviously, the Depression wasn't over in 1930, as he had been told by some business advisors. And my dad and uncle bought it from my grandfather in the 50s, grew the business, and my brother and I bought it from my dad and uncle in the 80s, and grew it by almost a factor of 10 here in town. So, yeah, it was founded by my grandfather, and it stayed in the family all those years.
And I suspect a lot of people own Century Safes without knowing it. George Conboy, any Century Safes hanging around here?
I have two.
You have two. So obviously you made safes. Anything else, Jim?
No, mostly safe security products. We made gun safes, small security chests, but fire safe home security storage for home and light commercial use was our primary focus.
And I am asking now because the question is what becomes of these 350 jobs. So what's the breakdown, Jim, of the 350 jobs we're talking about that are going to be gone now? How do they break down in terms of the skills and what these folks were doing for CenturySafe?
Well, the majority of the payroll in Rochester was direct labor hours for plant direct operators in the manufacturing. So probably 70% were in manufacturing positions and direct labor, and 30% were in staff, overhead, headquarters kind of positions. So I imagine it's going to be hard to move the direct labor people. I mean, what they're trying to do is cut costs and move to Mexico, and they probably won't be looking to pay anything like the wage scale we had up here.
Probably. Go ahead, Jim.
For the exempt people, I imagine certainly the customer-facing people, they're going to keep around. That was a great team. We had great loyalty amongst our customers. A lot of, I think, the headquarters functions, there was a little bit of rationalization between Fortune Brands and Century. They've moved some people out to Wisconsin already, but I think most of that rationalization has already happened. So I like to think that the majority of the exempt positions that our customer facing will continue.
350 jobs. So even if it's not all 350 folks who are going to need some kind of work, you've already heard some business leaders locally talking about what to do, retraining, et cetera. And again, Jim Brush is the former CEO of CenturySafe. That wasn't your job over the years to figure out what happens when companies like this close and or plants close. But what do you hope could happen? What's a good outcome for most of these people? And what's realistic in this community?
Well, the best outcome, of course, is they get equivalent positions in companies that treated them like we did. I think the likelihood of that is probably fairly low. Rochester community, it's a great community, but it's not growing. Manufacturing has largely gotten left, and a lot of manufacturers have left the state because they were unable to compete. And New York State is not the easiest place to do business. We were able to do it. We were able to be profitable. But in a lot of other companies that choose more to compete on price versus innovation, they've got to cut costs. And the state of New York is a little less easy than a lot of others to do business with.
Yeah.
So I don't think there are a lot of manufacturing opportunities available in town.
We invited the CEO of the Rochester Business Alliance, Bob Duffy. He was not available to come on. He has said, George Conboy, that across this region, he knows of companies that still have help wanted signs out, but they can't always fill every position, which kind of flies in the face of some conventional wisdom, but he's saying there could be some opportunity around. What do we make of that?
It wouldn't surprise me that especially the more skilled manufacturing workers at Century could find work, whether it's plastics work. I think there's plenty of plastics work that comes out of Century. Metalworking. The cement part, I heard from a supplier yesterday who said we're going to lose $2 million worth of cement work that we're not going to be able to send over to Century anymore. And that comes from Rochester Portland Cement down on Boxart Street, if I'm not mistaken.
And so I think we haven't talked about suppliers, but you think the question of suppliers is also in play here, George?
Sure, because you don't just have employees whom you're paying and those people go out and pay their bills with their salaries. You also have suppliers from whom Century would buy equipment, would buy raw materials. I imagine some of which had to have been here in Rochester, not all of it, however.
Let's get a short break. We're going to come back with George Conboy of Brighton Securities. Jim Brush, the former CEO of CenturySafe, is on the line with us. We've got more callers. If you're on the line waiting to join the conversation, we're going to come to you next, and we're going to talk about, especially get sort of the local perspective on, is this injurious to a regional reputation? Is this just another hit? Does this impact any other opportunities to try to bring other companies in? We'll talk about much more when we come back after the short break on Connections. Coming up tomorrow on this program, it is Innovation Friday. My co-host Matthew Leonard is typically the man who sits next to me, but he, as the editor at the Innovation Trail, is out on assignment, and we're going to be talking to a number of folks deploying our reporters around the state from the Innovation Trail, innovation.org, innovationtrail.org, and Innovation Friday, news on the upstate economy beyond CenturySafe, tomorrow on this program.
Tiny Cotulla, Texas sits on a huge oil deposit, and
we're known as the hotel capital of the Eagle Shale.
25 hotels handle business travelers, but the price of oil is down and town leaders worry.
What are their plans to do with empty businesses?
The boom-bust cycle, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Paul in Irondequoit, you're next. Go ahead, Paul.
Part of the conversation focused on the employee wages, and I've been in that plant. The people were well-paid. They were very nice people and, you know, just a quality business overall. But my question really is, with the improvements that the governor claims to have made in manufacturing techs that I see advertised on television, how did that play into this? How come they took this plant and closed it instead of closing someplace else and bringing it here? I'd like to, you know, I'm having thoughts on, did our manufacturing tax base actually improve or didn't it? And I'll take my, you know, take my answer off the air.
Yeah, Paul, thank you. It's a good question, and he may be referring to the advertising he's seen. New York State has spent roughly $50 million advertising the new Startup New York program that the governor has touted as a big job creation engine. That is related to universities and essentially properties connected to universities, or at least the space. They're trying to sort of leverage some of intellectual property, universities, et cetera. So it's been a slow growth in the first year for Startup New York, as we've talked about on this program. They're hoping to see 2,000 to 5,000 jobs in the next few years with that. But I don't know that that would have been in play for something like CenturySafe. Jim Brush, are you aware of any programs that would have possibly been leveraged to keep your former company here?
No, we didn't see much. You know, a lot of the things we're talking about just now are for new companies bringing new jobs. There wasn't much available for an existing business like ours. We certainly paid our fair share of taxes. You know, if anything, I think the climate for business in the state of New York, as much as I think the governor and others are working hard to change it, is still not as competitive. And a lot of it is just compliance-related overhead that it makes it more and more difficult for us to keep on top of all the things we need to be in compliance with. We have to hire people and pay them to stay in compliance, and if you're not, there's penalties. And you know, that was clearly becoming, you know, the last 10 years has become a bigger issue, not only for our company, I think for every company that operates in the state.
Well, and in many ways, this has become kind of a blood sport among states, leveraging tax opportunities to attract companies or various packages. And Jim's right, a lot of it's new companies. But George Conboy, I see a little bit of cognitive dissonance going on in the last couple of days. I've seen people on social media. I've seen community leaders saying, we want blood. This is Master Lock betraying our community. They came in a year ago. How could they do this? And yet many of those people are the same ones who say, New York State has the worst business climate. We've got to do better. So how can you say we've got the worst business climate, or we've got to do so much better for businesses, and then decry Master Lock moving the jobs here? It doesn't really seem to wash.
Decrying Master Lock doing what they want with their asset is like saying, gee, we're really mad at the lion because the lion devours the antelope. That's what lions do. Fortune Brands is a large public company. They bought Century. They have the right to do with it what they want. Doesn't mean we have to like what they do with it. I don't like what they do with it, but I understand why they're doing it, and I wish they had some other alternatives or had examined the kind of engineering or cost cuts that could have kept the jobs here. But the fact is, although there's a visceral reaction to say, boy, we hate those guys, there's nothing that they're doing that is morally wrong or that is out of the ordinary in business.
Is it an affirmation of some of the cries from the business community that we are not as competitive as we think we are?
I'd like to say that it is, because I tend to think that we're not that competitive. But in fact, it may be completely centric to this company. Fact is, they have manufacturing operations elsewhere. It's natural that they might want to consolidate a smaller operation into a larger operation and close an operation. And I don't think it's necessarily it's our business climate. I think it has a lot more to do with the fact these guys already have a factory. You can turn out more goods from that same factory and do it cheaper. They're going to do it.
Yeah, and I guess, Jim Brush, I'm curious to get your take as well. And you were just saying that as the former CEO of this company, you do feel that our region is not as competitive as we like. I don't know if the governor would like to hear that. But, you know, when I talk to NFIB and we talk to Unshackle Upstate and these organizations that are promoting this kind of growth, they're saying what you're saying, which is that this is going to happen if we don't see things change. How do you view it?
Well, sadly, I think that's true. You know, we've been here for three generations, and we have lots of reasons to stay here, and we're profitable enough. And because we had an innovation platform to compete upon, we beat the Chinese. But for companies that really are struggling, New York State, especially for a manufacturer, is not a very friendly state. The tax rates, the business climate, the regulation. This is both federal and state. It's not just New York State. But combined, it's making it more and more difficult for manufacturers to cover their costs and make sure they stay in compliance.
Here's Ed on Twitter who says, Master Lock is another example of no moral commitment to the United States. Spreadsheet profit before country. We all lose again to corporate America. Ed's obviously fired up about this. Jim Brush, is that too strong? What do you make of Ed's comment?
Well, you know, we live in a capitalist society, for better or for worse, and if companies can't make a profit is nothing more than the cost of being in business in the future. So you need to stay in business, and you've got to do what you got to do to stay in business. And it is a competitive world.
But you did stay in business. Your company did for more than 8 decades.
Yes, we did. And we did it by being innovative, by bringing on new products. We made huge investments in capital equipment, new product development, consumer research. And our product category was one where we discovered a number of unmet needs and were able to fill that. So not every company is frankly able to do that well. I think everyone would rather work on a innovation platform and, you know, be able to name their price rather than having to match the cost out of China because it's a commodity.
A moral commitment to the United States. George Conboy, what do you think of that language?
I wonder what kind of car Ed drives, and even if it's a Ford or Chevy, what percentage content is produced here in the U.S.? I mean, you know, we all make our own decisions. Unfortunately, a company doesn't have a moral requirement to do business in the U.S. They just don't. I hate that because my business is here in Rochester. It's grown organically here in Rochester, just like Century Safe has. We live here, we work here, we pay our employees here, and we buy our goods and services here. But the fact is that large companies making large goods in a global economy are going to source them where they can make profits, and their fiduciary responsibility, their financial responsibility, is to their owners, to their shareholders. When it's the Brush family, they can accept a lower offer because they think somehow it will be better for their employees or whatever legacy they want. That's a reasonable thing. But the larger the company is and the more diffuse the ownership is, your obligation is to the numbers on that piece of paper, unfortunately.
Well, and we are seeing the difference between Master Lock, owned by
Fortune Brands Home Security.
Fortune Brands Home Security versus Century Safe, again, a company founded here in 1930. And, George, I take the point you just made, but I also think about what the Brush family did, which is consider other options, but also say, okay, if we're going to manufacture something that's high quality, we're going to trust the market to recognize that they will have to pay more for it. For this to work, we can't compete making cheap safes mm-hmm. with the Chinese or with companies in Mexico, but we can ask the market to recognize quality. And I have great admiration for that, don't you?
Absolutely. It's the only way you can successfully compete against medium tech products. The fact of the matter is, when you have a product where labor is a big input, or if labor is the only input, you're not going to be able to compete. You'll always find somebody who can make it cheaper. But if you engineer better features, if you market it better, if you create demand for a product that you invent, for that matter, then you can sell it from almost anywhere with almost any wage base.
Before we get back to the phones to finish the hour with George Conboy of Brighton Securities and Jim Brush, the former CEO of CenturySafe, who's on the line with us. George, just real briefly, a lot of attention on these 350 jobs, this company, and what's happening this week. Does this even make a blip? Does this hurt the region's reputation at all? We always have, at any given point, there are negotiations going on to bring companies in. Mark Peterson at GRE and Bob Duffy and so many other people, the governor and his staff and Vinny Esposito and all these very dedicated people. Does this make a blip at all? Should we be worried about this at all?
I don't think it's a regional reputation thing. They didn't close because you couldn't fill out a workforce. They didn't close because you couldn't get supplies or skilled trades. They closed because there was a corporate consolidation. And although the loss of those jobs to those employees is an absolute tragedy, to our region, it's part of the normal back and forth of any economy.
All right, Bill and Webster. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm wondering if a company has a moral commitment to pay taxes in the country that they earn their profit in, instead of setting up shell companies in another country so they can reduce their tax liability.
Jim Brush, what do you think?
Was the question, does the company have a moral obligation to pay taxes in the country they work?
Yeah, Bill, say it again for us.
So if you earn your profit in the United States, do you have a responsibility as a corporation to your customers and citizens to pay taxes in the country that you predominantly earn your profit in, instead of shifting that profit offshore to Switzerland or, you know, pick the country of your choice and avoiding paying your fair share of taxes to the country where you earn your profit?
I guess all I can say is we certainly didn't. We paid our fair taxes back. We paid more than our fair share of taxes right here in the state of New York. We had no shell companies. Ours was a very black and white approach to taxation. We follow the letter of the law. And you know, I guess it is a capitalist society. People that run businesses have to find ways to make sure their costs are in line so that they can be competitive in the marketplace. And I guess as long as they comply with the law, that's all you can really ask. Now, I personally agree that, you know, if you rely upon a community in its totality, the infrastructure, the education system, the roads, if you rely upon that community for your business to be successful, it seems to me you do have an obligation to pay a level of taxes in the place where you belong. But that's just my opinion.
George Conboy?
If you have a beef with earning profits here and paying little taxes or paying them elsewhere or offshoring them, the beef isn't going to be with the company. The company's a taxpayer just like you or I. And if you have a deduction that you're legally entitled to take, you take it. If you have a beef with the tax code, it's with Congress. Petition Congress to change the tax code in such a way that companies will comply with what it is you're interested in. But the fact is, the beef shouldn't be with the company. The company is just following the law,
and
as we all do.
But complexity is good for lawyers. And you know how many lawyers there are in Congress, George?
Lawyers and accountants, yes.
Yes, there's lots
yes,
of them.
Yes, of course.
Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes. So much of what's being said in terms of, I'll just frame it in the values that Mr. Rush, that's been said and people have called in. Listen, I don't know if you are aware of the movement on worker-owned co-ops, which exemplify all the values you're talking about, local, a sense of community. They make a profit, and the funding for some of these now is being done in various ways, some government, some foundation, and Rochester, the city of Rochester just is in the process of doing that. I would urge you to put pressure on Duffy, whoever else you have to put it on, to seriously consider, because what you just described, and I'm familiar with these, I've never worked in one, but I've involved with people that are really pushing and trying to get a lot of attention on this, because it is an option, because most of this dialogue has been, you have to take what we get, and that's it. That is not necessarily true, and we need to do these things that will honor the very things that this company worked so hard to do and not just have to say, well, it's not against the law, so too bad, we just lose. No, that's not the only answer. So please, please, Duffy, if he doesn't know about them, shame on him, because there's been a lot of attention given to this now, and I'd be more than willing. There's a film called Shift Change that outlines all this. So please, if you need, Evan has my phone, my information, I think. Please, if you need to call me, do it. But do not let this option, without pursuing it, go, because you have a site and everything else, which is another one of the issues that often comes up with how you start these businesses. If you have a site, it's much better. Okay, trying to talk fast here. Time limited.
Thank you, Bonnie. Worker-owned co-ops is what she's talking about. Jim, I think what she seems to be saying is, we have seen more of a movement about this. It's not the majority of the market, but we have seen worker-owned co-ops in various sectors. Do you have any hope that the people who have worked for you and your family could find a way to do something like that? Is that even realistic, do you think, Jim?
Well, I'd sure like to think so, but I think, in any business, it takes someone with a vision and an idea to, share that vision, get the organization started, make the investment. And I think that's where you start. I think I certainly agree that the culture of a company can make it much, much stronger. And ours is a great example. Our culture is very strong, sort of like work-owned co-ops. And you have a vested interest in the success of the business, and that creates a whole different attitude of people toward their work and their degree of commitment.
Well, I think we all agree that if somehow these remaining employees formed a worker-owned co-op and kick Master Locks behind, that would be a great story. George Conboy, do you look at these kind of solutions as possible, realistic?
Possible? Sure. Realistic? Very difficult. A close example locally would be Gleason Works, Gleason Corporation. They were a publicly held company. You could buy stock in them. And in 1999, they went private. It was a private equity deal. Private equity paired up with senior management bought all the stock back in, and a lot of middle-level managers were encouraged to also be owners. So while it wasn't every employee, it was many, many employees. 2006, Vestar, the private equity firm, sold Gleason to that group of workers that owned them. Now, when I say workers, I'm talking about the CEO and down, but plenty of middle-level managers, skilled people at Gleason, owned stock in that operation. That's as close as I've seen, but it was a hard deal to put together. The more people you have making decisions, the more people that have to buy into a deal, tougher it is to put together.
About 45 seconds. Jim Brush, the former CEO of CenturySafe, I want to close with you here. You know, look, your family sold for about $117 million. Like you said, you knew you'd be okay either way here. But what are some final thoughts you want to leave this community with on this issue?
Oh, boy. I'm saddened by the whole thing, and I'm shocked that this decision was taken by Masterlock and Fortune Brands. And it just, you know, not only the impact on our employees, but our suppliers and the impact we had on this community, I'm afraid is largely going to disappear over time. And that's devastating to me.
20 seconds. George Conboy, what's the lesson from this week?
The lesson is you've got to do it through engineering. You can't do it through low cost, or we can't do it in upstate New York.
Jim Brush, thanks for taking the hour for us, answering a lot of not only our questions, but our listeners who are friends and family of your former employees. I know they have appreciated it, and so have I. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan.
And George Conboy, always nice to get your perspective on this and other issues in our local business community. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Evan.
And thanks for listening to member-supported public radio. Val LaBanca is the engineer extraordinaire of this program. Caitlin Madison, the outstanding intern who's helping out with this program today. And Barsuk Records and Ra Ra Rai providing the music for this program. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk to you on Innovation Friday.